Shëndetje and welcome to Inside Albania with me, Alice Taylor. Today I am not inside Albania. I am in the capital of Kosovo, Pristina. I decided to come here because throughout the two seasons of this year, we've had a huge interest in what's been happening in Kosovo. Today, in this building here, I have an interview with the Deputy Prime Minister of Kosovo, Besnik Bislimi. Come with me. Thank you very much for your time today. I know you're very busy and I greatly appreciate it. And I want to start off the interview with the most positive bit of news recently, which is that from the 1st of January, Kosovo citizens will benefit from visa liberalisation in the EU. And this has been a very long road for Kosovo and it's great news. But I want to hear from you, what does this mean to you, to your government and to the people of Kosovo?
Well, is one of the processes that was very important, not only economically, but also for the social integration of Kosovo into EU. From the 1st of January, many things will change, but in the positive sense. This is also the logic of us fighting very hard to get the visa liberalization because we see many benefits from it. Better connection of the business community, ability of them to participate in fairs and other B2B meetings around Europe, establish connection, maybe intensify the cooperation, which means new opportunities for export, much more opportunities for youth in the area of culture, sport, tourism and others. And for the government, we believe that this will then create further opportunities also to improve the welfare. At the same time, we are doing everything that our capacities allow to make sure that the process starts and goes smoothly so that when we do the first inventory of the process, we can report positive behavior on the side of Kosovo so that nobody can discuss potential negative measures against our country in the context of visa liberalization.
But does it, I mean, on a personal level, and amongst citizens, does it bring a feeling of being more part of Europe, being closer to Europe, being a part of this bigger community?
Maybe the sense of being more accepted as part of Europe because we are part of Europe and we want to be included in every decision where the future of Europe is decided. Because if you can imagine the future of Europe as a new house where we intend to be part of it, we should be included in the decision making about the design of that house, and our youth has, but also our decision makers in our areas have this opportunity to be live part of all of these processes.
Now, I believe tomorrow it's a year since Kosovo officially applied to start the process to join the EU. Now, a lot has happened in the last year. But where are we in this process? What status is this application at? Has there been any movement in the last 12 months?
Well, it was last Friday.
Last
Friday, 1 year from the application. Prime Minister Kuti has submitted the application in Prague on December 15th of 2022. So we had assumed that the response from the Council will come much earlier. However, the problem is that the second half of 2023 was chaired by a non-recognizer that maybe did not see many incentives to move the process ahead. We believe that on our part, we are ready to undertake this new adventure. We believe that Kosovo institutions are much better prepared to start the accession talks than all other members of the Western Balkans at the moment when they were awarded the candidate status. Our key disadvantage turned to be our advantage because we were implementing the SAA for more than 6 years, and this has helped us build capacities. But what needs to happen first is that Commission assesses our capacities before the accession talks are opened. But for this, they need the signal from the Council. We hope that the Council will find the strength now under Belgian presidency to build that unity around our integration process. So what happened so far is that due to the five non-recognizers, EU still kept this individual position on recognition, so there's diversity and recognition, but they still were able to build unity on supporting Kosovo's EU integration path. After the war in Ukraine, I think the integration of Western Balkans has gained in geostrategic importance, and we need to see this also converted into real decisions. It makes no sense to declare accelerated integration as a strategy goal and still have one country that is struggling to get the candidacy status.
You mentioned the challenges of the Spanish presidency due to it being a non-recognizer. Now we have Belgium for 6 months, but then followed by Hungary. Although they recognize Kosovo, there are other challenges that persist there. And I'm wondering, what do you foresee in the next 6 months under the Belgian presidency? And what perhaps might you foresee in the subsequent 6 months under Hungary?
So ideally, we would have this process of moving, let's say, our application from Council to Commission during the Belgian presidency. It will be in line also with the promises on the Europe side on all integration processes of the Western Balkan countries. However, we don't expect that Hungary will have a negative stance when it comes to Kosovo's integration process. For your information, despite all the animosities that Hungary might have caused to the EU in the decision making in the last months or years, when it comes to Kosovo, they have supported our EU integration path. Actually, in my cabinet, I have one advisor on EU integration that has been seconded by the Hungarian Minister of Foreign Affairs. So I hope that this spirit of support will be then integrated in the Hungarian presidency when they take over on July 1st.
And we saw in the summit last week in Brussels, there was progress with Ukraine, with Moldova, with Georgia, with Bosnia and Herzegovina as well. With Kosovo, no. And Kosovo is one of the most pro-EU countries in Europe, along with Albania. How does this frustrate people? You know, they're very pro-EU and that there's this constant waiting, sort of waiting in line and seeing other countries progress. I'm not saying they don't deserve to, but does this frustrate people?
Well, it frustrates people, of course. It frustrates also the business community. It frustrates the policymakers. But frustration should not be the basis or the starting point for our policymaking. So we have to navigate in the situation that we are faced with, and we have to find the best outcome under those limitations that we face. First, we fully support the EU decision to grant or to open accession talks with Ukraine, and I think this will be an important input also in the efforts that Ukraine is putting to win this war against Russia. When Ukraine wins the war, all EU has won. When Ukraine loses the war, all EU has lost. In this context, everything that can support these efforts will be appreciated and supported by Kosovo. However, we believe that at this point, granting of the of this opening of accession talks to Ukraine and Moldova has to some extent contradicted the basic approach of meritocratic progress towards EU. Because as you clearly mentioned, if meritocracy, our own merits, do matter, Kosovo will be on the forefront. But then we hope that the same principle or the same cohesion that could be built on Ukraine will be built soon also on Kosovo, because the situation in Kosovo is even more complicated than in Ukraine. Kosovo is inside EU. It's not on the periphery of the EU, it's inside EU. Since all Western Balkan countries are surrounded by the EU countries, but inside this inside, Kosovo is isolated because it's the only country in Europe that does not border with any EU member. So we border with Serbia, Montenegro, North Macedonia, and Albania, none of them currently an EU member. This further complicates the situation, also on security aspects and others. That's why we deserve some specific attention in this context. Second, the accession talks to Ukraine was given mainly to support the current political situation and the war. In Kosovo, we have a better situation. We can use the accession process to prevent conflict. And this is easier, and it brings much more benefits, and it is less costly. So now we are discussing hundreds of billions of euros to support winning the war in Ukraine, while with much less we can prevent the war in the region. And the additional benefit problem is that while still the conflict between Russia and Ukraine is a bilateral conflict, there could be no bilateral conflict in the region, in the Western Balkans. As soon as you have a conflict, it will easily spread to the neighboring countries. So the potential negative consequences will be much larger than in the case of Ukraine and Russia. That's why it's of paramount importance for the EU to recognize this and act upon this recognized reality.
I wanted to ask as well, touching on the summit again from last week, there were very strong calls, not just from Kosovo, but other countries and individuals as well, to remove the measures which have been placed upon Kosovo. Is this something we foresee happening, or are things going to remain as they are, as far as you know?
Well, our expectation was that the summit will be used to, let's say, correct, in our opinion, this mistake that was done in the process, but which has harmed the economy, but also the image of Kosovo internationally, because we believe that these negative measures have also produced imbalance in the dialogue process, despite the fact that the intention maybe was to entice some constructive behavior in their perspective. This has backfired. There were many countries that did support it, immediate removal of measures, and there were some countries that were in favor of gradual removal of negative measures. However, the compromise that was found at the end was reached at the lowest common denominator among countries. The problem is that when you have countries that support something and countries that insist on something, it doesn't matter the numbers. Always what will happen is what those countries insist. So, for example, on the case of Serbia, you had 26 countries that maybe agreed on something, but Hungary insisted on something else, and then this position prevailed. So we have many supporters that do support the removal of measures. We need one supporter that insists on that. And I think this will help, but there is still a sentence in the conclusions of Council that opens the way for this, because it says the Council is ready to remove the measure upon inputs by the High Representative. And we know that the High Representative was in favor of removing the measures. So all we need at this point is that High Representative Vice President Mr. Borrell needs to send a letter where he supports the removal of measures.
So we're hopeful.
I'm optimistic, because this process, if not addressed immediately, might harm other important processes of the EU, not Kosovo only, but also like the growth plan.
I want to talk about economic development a bit now. So we mentioned this earlier, but Kosovo has outperformed many of its neighbours, I'm going to say most, all of its neighbours, in pretty much every area over the last few years. And I want to talk in the context of economic development. What are the accomplishments that this government has had specifically in this area, but also what are the challenges that you faced, and looking forward, what challenges are there?
Well, when you start a government mandate, you usually start by presenting the key objectives. And our key objective was jobs and justice, in addition to other accompanying goals, but jobs and justice were the key goals of the government. And then whether you were successful in this, you develop indicators that will tell you whether you are on the right track and whether you are outperforming or not the neighboring countries. Usually the numbers that you use is the increase in per capita GDP over the period, the budget performance, the movement on the level of public debt, and the number of jobs created or formalized. In all these areas, Kosovo has outperformed. For example, if you look at the change in budget revenues, we managed to increase the budget by 2/3 in less than 2.5 years. So this is immense. There is no other country in Europe that has reproduced this, let's say, in the last two decades. And then the question is, but which policies led to that? This creates further confusion because it's not that we have undergone a substantial fiscal reform. So we had the same tax rates, the same marginal taxes, the same tax authorities and the custom authorities, but much better performance. Then we see the sources of this achievement in two elements. First one is the lack of corruption. So it means that this additional hundreds of millions, they were still here in Kosovo, also in the previous period, but they ended maybe in private pockets instead of the state budget. So now they are going where they're supposed to go. And second, there is a dividend on democracy. People were reluctant to pay taxes because they had the belief that their taxes were being misused. Now that there is a trust in the new government elite, there is a stronger willingness to pay the tax obligation. And maybe the third element that you could add is the good design of intervention packages of the government that somehow link the benefits of the business community to the number of jobs formalized. So we have managed to formalize more jobs in less than 18 months than in the last 20 years. So actually in the last 20 years we had an increase in the informality. Now we have around 15,000 jobs formalized. So now in the area of per capita GDP, we also have the highest growth rate cumulative for the last 3 years in the region. If you look isolated, if you remove the year of pandemic, Montenegro has outperformed us, but this was because they had a larger decline during the pandemic. So net effect is larger in Kosovo. And another element that is crucial and which we use somehow to dismantle the narrative created by the opposition that the business community is struggling in Kosovo is the increase in corporate income taxes. In less than 2 years, the revenues from the corporate income taxes have increased by 63%, despite the fact that there were no increases in the marginal tax rate, which shows that the same business community has managed to register 60% more profits in only 2 years. So this sends the message outside that Kosovo is a good location to do business. Another element that is worth mentioning is that we have secured that this additional revenues generated from the state budget, from the tax authorities and the custom authorities, is then used by the government to ensure that this outperforming economy is sustainable. So we have tried to make sure that this performance of the economy is not detrimental to our fights to reduce inequalities in the society. So for the first time in history, we have introduced universal child allowances. We have introduced universal maternity leave coverage for even for those women that do not work at all. This year, this December, we also started something new in the region, something that could be interpreted as the negative income tax credit. We are paying back to households part of the tax revenues in line with the amount of annual income that they have generated. The idea is that households that have generated income less than a given threshold get some of the taxes paid back, especially those that are related to the expenses for kids. Mm-hmm. So imagine that we calculate given amount of money that a parent should spend on kids. And then we have calculated how much value the tax will be included in these goods, and we are paid that money back to the households. I think this is a family-friendly policy in all areas, that is intended to make the policy sustainable. In the same time, we have managed to fight poverty by creating 62,000 new jobs in the economy.
This was going to be my next question about tackling the issue of poverty, but you've covered it there, and these family-friendly policies, I mean, it makes me kind of want to come and live here. Now, I want to talk about the ongoing situation with Kosovo and Serbia. Obviously, this is the elephant in the room that we have to talk about. And I wondered, can you give me a general overview of the status of the investigation into the terrorist attack? What's the situation now on the border between Kosovo and Serbia and in the north in terms of security? And also, can we expect elections to be taking place in the north within the next few months, or what's the timeline for those?
I hope I will manage to summarize all the elements required in your question. Let me start by the security situation. As long as Serbia resists to deal with the consequences of Banjska, which means arrest participants and extradite them to the Kosovo authorities, but these people are left in freedom and they're still circulating around the border to Kosovo and preparing and training for new attacks, we cannot claim and pretend that the security situation is okay. But what we know is that KFOR is much more vigilant in the north, and the joint patrols of KFOR with the Kosovo police have increased dramatically in the period after Banjska. We have concluded our investigations. Unfortunately, we see a reluctance of our prosecutor authorities to move faster. To what extent this is produced endogenously by the internal procedures, to what extent they might be exposed to pressures from outside factors, it still remains to be seen. In the meantime, also U.S. authorities have run some independent investigations. We believe that they should be published, or they should have been published by now. But the common denominator of all of this investigation is that in all activities before and after Banjska, you don't have necessarily only involvement of Serbian authorities. You have the traces that go back to Vučić. Because there was a tendency on the Serbian side to only partially accept the blame and assign this blame to independently acting groups within the Serb intelligence or within the military and others, which, if accepted, will create a larger problem. Mm-hmm. Because if Serbian authorities publicly say that we don't have under control our intelligence service, we don't have under control our police and our military, pretty much they are saying that all the region is under threat. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that the problem is not in Kosovo, is not in Montenegro, is not in Bosnia and Herzegovina, but inside Serbia. Then the question will be whether maybe these KFOR troops should not be located in another country to secure the stability of the region.
Can I just ask, you said the investigation's been finalized. Has a copy of this been given to the European Commission?
We have given a copy of our findings. However, findings can produce actions and steps only from the prosecutor side.
Because I'd spoken with Peter Stanner at the end of November and I'd asked, you know, what information have you had? What status is the investigation? I was asking in relation to possible measures against Serbia, which we know have been drafted. And he said, well, we're not doing the investigation. We have to wait for the investigation to come from Kosovo. And he didn't really want to commit to where we were in this process and whether Serbia would be facing any measures. So I'm trying to understand what's going on here.
Kosovo is under measures. Peter Stanner never said, okay, we need to wait for an independent investigation to see whether Kosovo can be blamed for this reason. So pretty much the idea that we need to wait for the investigation so that we can discuss potential installment of measures is a pretext. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a double standard.
It's a double standard.
Because they did it for Kosovo very quickly, and now for Serbia, it's, let's wait and see what happens. Now, When this all happened, when things escalated in the north, there was the attack on NATO troops, etc., and these measures came in, and there was criticism against the government and Albin Kurti, the prime minister. This came from the US, from the EU. I'm not going to go into my personal views on that, but do you think Kosovo should have played a more diplomatic game? Do you think there was anything that could have been done differently? Because, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, what we see now, the measures against Kosovo, but not against Serbia, that sort of played into Aleksandar Vučić's hand a bit. Retrospectively, is there anything that could have been done slightly differently?
Well, first, I think the initial bias and the problem is created when we try to see the developments in the north as a game. Mm-hmm. When you see them from Brussels or from Bratislava, it is easy to fall into this trap and say there is a game. Some players are playing better, others are not playing better. For us, it's not a game. So if you are in Slovakia, but your country is already in the EU, is a member of NATO and others, you can play games. But when you are in Kosovo, you don't have the candidacy status. You're not even a member of the Council of Europe. You don't have the Partnership for Peace. It's a matter of existence. It's not a matter. And our statehood was under threat in the north. So you don't play games with the status of your statehood or this challenges on the statehood. Pretty much you should not put Kosovo under the situation when you say them, either you play in the hands of Vučić by accommodating his request, or you play in the hands of Vučić by not accommodating his requests. So because if both options lead to the same outcome, then I will choose the one which doesn't accommodate his requests. Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of sovereignty, of doing what's best for the country, not what somebody in a different city or country or continent thinks is best for the country.
Well, we can make compromises when it comes to alternatives. Mm-hmm. Should we have, let's say, investor from X country on the energy or epsilon country or vice? Should we invest in Zubin Potok or in Leposavich? Mm-hmm. Here we are free to know. But should we see ourselves as sovereign or should we not see it? Should we close the eyes? I think you should not put the question, the country under that dilemma.
And actually, I wanted to go back to this. You mentioned one of the municipalities in question, elections in the north. I believe there were some attempts to start the process in some of the four municipalities. Can we expect to see elections in the north in the coming months?
Well, what has happened so far is that a group of citizens have started the initiative to collect signatures. They have informed the municipal authorities. Municipality authorities have notified them that the process have to follow the rules of the administrative instruction. Based on those rules, the information has managed to be transmitted to the Central Election Committee. The Central Election Committee had 5 days to respond. Now they have sent the response by telling to the group of citizens that this is the number of voters in each municipality, and this is the number of signatures you need to collect. And now it's up to them to do the remaining part. Only after this process is completed, we will know how long it will take. Because then the rest are procedures that depend on the capacities of the public administration to respond. Up to that, it depends completely on the capacities and willingness of this group of citizens and the trust that individuals might have on them, but also on the prospects in the future. So if I'm a citizen in Leposavić, I will only give my signature to remove the current mayor if I see somewhere a light at the end of tunnel where there is another mayor that might really represent my interest. Until now, there was only a tendency to brainwash the citizens by removing the heads of the Lista Srpska, but still keeping Lista Srpska as the only available option. Now, what happened pretty much is that the current leadership of Lista Srpska, once they mismanaged the funds of Serbian boat apartments in Belgrade and Novi Sad, have said, okay, now we had enough money, now let's pick up a new group of people that will misuse the funds, and you have to vote for them. If I will sit in Lepo Savage, I will say, well, come on. These people installed the criminal activity. These people installed the smuggling. No, I finally got rid of them, and they want to get restored again. So I think they're waiting for new initiatives, new alternatives, so that they see that the progress is possible and is a real option.
Now, something positive, the license plate situation. I remember I reported on this issue extensively, you know, when people were blocking roads and there were these blockades and big problems. But now I understand that the transition of the license plates has been completed. It's gone smoothly. There were no issues, I believe. What changed to allow this smooth transition compared to attempts previously?
That's a very good question. And I think nobody has wanted to analyze the true sources of this success. But first, it's important that it was completed. So if you do a survey now in the north, you will not find KM car plates anymore, so they're out of circulation. And at this moment, when there are no more KM car plates in the circulation, I think there is no logic anymore for Serbia to still insist on the stickers regime. So pretty much if all Serb citizens, Serb minority citizens in Kosovo have RKS car plates, by insisting on the stickers regime, Serbia is punishing them disproportionately because they're asking their national compatriots to put stickers when they leave. So that's why the only logical next step will be to completely abolish this stickers regime and have both countries recognize the car plates of each other. Now, the question is very intriguing. How come that for 18 months they blocked everything and now in 2 months the process was successful in less than that? This shows that citizens in the north were willing to comply from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. They were prevented to do this. And they were prevented from the leadership in Serbia. And then the question must go back on what has changed the incentive of Serbia. And I think here we see the true logic. When we signed, approved or accepted the Brussels Agreement and the implementation annex in Ohrid, the implementation annex says clearly that both parties commit to honor all articles of the agreement, implement them in good faith without preconditioning. On the same day, and then in continuity, Serbia is denying the acceptance of this agreement. So Mr. Vucic on several occasions, Madam Brnabic, Dacic, Drecun, Petkovic, all leaders that somewhat directly or indirectly deal with the issue of Kosovo have said verbally, we have not accepted the agreement, don't expect from us to implement it. Vucic has said in one instance, only Kosovo has taken obligation. And there is one interview when he says, we have not signed, ergo we have not accepted, and we have no obligations. Whatever we have signed, we will implement. So pretty much he was begging to the EU, force us to sign because only then we will implement. Because you did not want to trust them, you forced them somehow to put this also in written. So last week, Ana Brnabic deposited a letter which says, if you don't trust us verbally, no, you have also it in written, that for us there is no agreement, we will not implement it. But because we are nice, we will still cherry pick and do something to show that we are constructive. So on one side, I give you the letter that tells you that I intend to violate the agreement because there is no agreement. On the other side, I give you car plates so that you don't come harsh on me. So pretty much it's a game. That's why rewarding Serbia now for this constructive move, I think is the wrong tool to be used.
And actually, I was going to ask about this letter that was sent, which basically undermines everything the EU has done and said in the last few months. You know, while they're still...
But certifies the rationale behind Kosovo's insistence on the signature.
Yes, because
the Brussels Agreement has a title. It says Agreement on the Path to Normalization. Mm-hmm. And we can only move to normalization if we have full commitment. Because of the lack of commitment, Serbia had to say verbally. When you did not trust them, they had to act on terrain, create disturbances on the terrain. So whatever you have seen, withdrawal of the Serbian police and the officials, boycott of the elections, attack on KFOR on the 29th, kidnapping of our police, Banska, these are five episodes that depend on this non-acceptance of the agreement. Mm-hmm. And now we have the Vrtan. If everything is not helping, we force Serbia to also invert and say we don't have an agreement.
I can't understand how they've done with these violations, like you said. They've put in writing that they basically disregard all agreements, but yet Kosovo has measures against it, and Kosovo is being forced to implement the Association of Serb Municipalities in a form that it doesn't really want to. Can I ask quickly, what's the status of that at the moment, whether there is a draft sort of that is...
Well, first, let me say that if you do a two-minute search online, you will find an article or an interview of Mr. Lajčak that clearly says, we will never draft a statute on behalf of Kosovo. Kosovo should do this. And this was told to the Kosovo team several times, but still this did not prevent Lajčak to hire lawyers and write a draft statute. On 26th of October, in the meeting with Chancellor Kohl, Scholz, President Macron, and Prime Minister Meloni, and HR Borrell, Mr. Kurti said that the obligation to draft the statute is our obligation. But because you are insisting on the urgency of the issue, I am willing to endorse in principle this document and transmit it to the Constitutional Court for review, because they are the institution that will decide whether it is in line or not. But for this, we have to ensure that documents are signed, all of them. Mm-hmm. So pretty much you have to understand the statement of Mr. Kurti only in this context, in the context of urgency and with the frame of signing all documents. So that will give them the full legality vis-a-vis EU or UN. Association of Serb Majority Municipalities is only one element or one paragraph of the basic agreement. And we have committed to implement all the agreement. So if you look at the documents that were given to us by Lajčak's office, the main purpose of the basic agreement is to ensure de facto recognition between Kosovo and Serbia. So everything that has to be implemented within this agreement has this goal. And we will value everything within this goal. Is Serbia moving toward full de facto recognition or not? And any step forward is subject to Serbia also moving in that direction. And the sequencing plan clearly has to specify for every procedure that Kosovo undertakes vis-a-vis ASM, endorsement, and a review by the Constitutional Court, approval of the government, maybe ratification on the assembly, and then establishment has to be followed by steps so that at the end you have
a level playing field.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
From Pristina, Kosovo, that's all for this week. Don't forget, you can watch Inside Albania on Euronews Albania every Saturday at 5 o'clock on our YouTube channel or across all major podcasting platforms. Until next time, Miro Pavshin.